The Perth Football Podcast is proudly brought to you by Macron Store Perth, an industry leader in quality teamwear specialising in grassroots, semi-pro and professional team attire. Visit the Macron Sports Hub Perth Facebook page for more. Thank you to Macron for helping us keep the pod running and for their continuous involvement in community sport.
He said that all my hair would disappear. Now look at my head. Your fate is sealed when your property's red. Redacted hit the top of the table. Kingsway hit five. Knights hit a Bayswater-shaped bump but remain undefeated while Inglewood... Oh, Inglewood. All that and more on the Perth Football Podcast. And we're back. It is the 6th of May, 2024. We've had another bumper round of NPL men's fixtures. What round are we up to now? Week 7? It's absolutely flying by. I am Sean Fry, the host of the Perth Football Podcast, joined to my right as we go clockwise around this screen by the greatest man, Josh Chiat. Josh, how are you?
How are you doing, Sean?
I'll ask you first, mate.
I'm glad I can get on now because it seemed like we were going to have a Joshless show before, and that's not what the punters are out.
No, not at all.
We're already... with the technical difficulties that we've overcome before we came online.
And what did you do? You turned it off and on again, and it all
yeah, I did the empty crowd thing.
Yeah, perfect. Well done, mate. We are Tommyless as well, so being Joshless and Tommyless would have been an absolute disaster. Producer Kalichi is also here. Producer Kalichi, how are you?
Gentlemen, I am terrific. It's been another good weekend of football in action. It's always good to see your faces, boys.
And we don't have a nickname for this one. Nickname. I didn't mean to do that on purpose, but we've got Nick with us. How are you, mate?
Handsome Nick.
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. Thanks.
Are you happy with Handsome Nick, or do you want to submit a different nickname?
Listen, I'm not going to lie; that's probably the first time I've been called handsome. So let's stick with that.
Let's go with it. All right.
We'd
love to write our own reviews, wouldn't we? Guys, let's jump straight in. We got a bumper pod coming up. So we've got to go with our Macron moment of the week. I'm going to jump in and start off with mine first of all, and that is one of my favourite young fellas in the NPL getting on the score sheet. Justin Tang is getting the equaliser late on for Knights. One of my favourites because he always used to give me a bit of banter about how much I would criticise him for being offside. But the perfect thing, when I did the commentary, that is, when he was at Coburn, perfect thing about this is, Justin, you can't be offside from a throw. So you can score from all the long throws you want. You can never be offside. Just a beautiful way for him to score. Kalichi, did you have a Macron moment of the week?
Probably going to steal Josh's one, but obviously we were down at Floreat United for their Wear It Pink Day in remembrance of Scarlet.
Forestfield. We're not supposed to talk about them anyway.
Forestfield?
No, you said Floreat United.
You said Floreat United.
You can tell it's been a long day. my moment of the week, of course, was being down at Forestfield United for their day with... paying homage to Scarlett Oliver. As much as it was the action on the pitch, it was also Jeff Fitzgerald and his action-packed 15 minutes. We talked to him before the game and after the game about how old guys like us have no business being on the pitch, and he had this shot that was the sweetest shot of his life. It cannoned off the woodwork, and then he had a yellow card, and then he conceded a penalty, and I was like, that's the kind of cameo performance that I would love to do myself, but I'm too humble to not play at that level. So during... And Forestfield were my moment of the week.
Fantastic.
The best thing about Jer talking about that strike was that, aside from the fact that he then immediately got a yellow card and then gave away a penalty, was that the last time he said he struck a ball so well, it hit the crossbar, hit the ground, bounced up and hit the crossbar and popped out again. So he's just one of those cursed individuals. If he strikes a ball well, he knows it's not going into the net. Moment of the week, I'm maybe stepping a little bit into the women's podcast here, but I was having a scan through some of the squaddy team sheets yesterday, just having a look at some of the leagues, and I noticed in the Perth Red Star MPLW under-21s an interesting name coming on for a few minutes at the end of their game. Kyla Bennett is back from her ACL injury from last year. She's
she's just getting warmed up into it.
Yeah, just getting warmed up into it. So good to see that she's back in action. Obviously, with all the talent that they've got in the back line at or in the back line and in the midfield at Perth Red Star, she's starting from the bottom and working her way up. But I'm sure it won't be too long before we see her in the MPL women's competition proper.
Brilliant stuff there. And handsome Nick Carter, do you have a moment of the week for us?
I'm going to go with Riley Wishart-Steven. That guy is phenomenal. When his hips go one way, his legs go another. And it's just a joy to watch him play. Like, you just don't know what he's going to do. The lad is unbelievable. He just loves scoring goals. Yeah, he's my moment of the week.
Brilliant stuff. And look, guys, we've gone too long on this podcast without hearing from Mr. Football himself. We all miss him so much. So we're going to start off by letting him tell us what happened, because they don't want us to talk about it. But it's very hard to not talk about it when you're top of the table, guys. So let's let him tell us about the table toppers and their 2-1 win over Balcatta, and a little interview with their goalkeeper, Jason Saldaris, as well.
Well, 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 Floriat 2, Balcatta 1, round 7 of the MPL WA men's competition complete, and we have new league leaders. Floriat, the new front runners, by virtue of their fifth win of season 2024, and that combined with Western Knights has dropped points at home to Bayswater means that Vass Vujicic's side sits 1 point clear at the summit with roughly a third of the season played. But they most certainly didn't have it their own way today. Balcatta had a lot of set pieces, a lot of territory, and loomed as a real threat throughout. They certainly had the better moments in front of goal, but Floriat, as good teams do and as teams at the top of the league tend to do, found a way to prevail with 3 points to keep their unbeaten run going, just the one defeat in their opening 7 games so far. Hassani Sinclair had a couple of early opportunities for Etna. He ghosted him behind on a couple of occasions. Probably the most exciting of those moments saw him round the goalkeeper, but then he just couldn't quite get the power on the shot to roll the ball into an empty net, and as a result, Ben Steele was able to get back on the line and clear away for the hosts. Floriat eventually worked their way into the game, though, and they took the lead just past the half-hour mark, and it was their young striker, Guy Davies, who got on the score sheet once again. The fourth game in a row in League and Cup to which he's netted. It's goal number 4 in the MPLWA this season, a real breakout season for the young man who, as Jason Saldaris told me after the game, is Floriat through and through, absolutely loves the club. And you can see with his celebrations that he's really enjoying these moments. He did a little bit of a tribute to Erling Haaland, the yoga-style celebration, after bagging the opening goal. Balcatta pressed later in the half. Roston Griffiths hit the crossbar with a header from a Jonathan Cornes corner. And then Hassani Sinclair glanced a header just wide of the post with Jason Saldaris scrambling to his left. But it was Athena's lead at the interval. And Balcatta, at the beginning of the second period, weren't as much a threat. Floriat were able to largely control the better of the game, I thought, in the first 20 minutes of the second period. And they got a second goal when Mohamed Al-Zaidi was given far too much time on the edge of the box to just strike low and past Connor Campbell in the Balcatta net. At that point, with Floriat holding a 2-goal cushion, it looked as though it was going to be a pretty cruisy end to proceedings for Vass Vujicic's side. But Balcatta gave Floriat an almighty scare. Plenty of long balls into the box, plenty of set pieces as well, and how they didn't convert one of them, I suppose we'll never know. They had plenty of practice at them throughout the afternoon, but before that, they were awarded a penalty when Ali Mohamed clipped Liam Hudson in the penalty area. Pretty clear spot kick, no real complaints from the home side. Ben Hinshelwood rifled into the top corner to make it 6 goals in 7 matches to start the season. He scored in every round of the competition this season, other than the round 4 2-2 draw with Perth Glory. And then as balls were being lifted into the box, Floriat were required to really stand up and stand tall and hold firm. And that's exactly what the league's best defence did in the end. They were able to stave off any threat, and Roston Griffiths' late deflected free kick was probably the closest they came to a legal goal, albeit they did have one in the back of the net, but Hassani Sinclair's header was ruled out by what I thought was potentially a Shogo Asawa offside. We'll have to go back and have a look at the replay of that one, as it wasn't quite clear, but regardless, Floriat held on for 3 points, and they are the new league leaders with 7 rounds of the competition played. So that's the tale of the tape from E&D Leaders Stadium. I caught up with Jason Saudaris after the game to ask him about Floriat's season so far and the game against Balcatta. And after that interview, you'll go back to Sean, Josh and Kalichi on the main pod. Cheerio. Perth Football Podcast, Tommy here at E&D Leaders Stadium, the home of the new league leaders, Floriat Athena, after a 2-1 win over Balcatta Etna. And it's a game which went a little bit against the grain in terms of what we've seen from Athena this season. I was just talking to Captain Jason Saudaris, who stood alongside me. And Jason, that was a little bit of a grind in the second half. Balcatta came at you with a lot of set of pieces, a lot of long balls to defend. But in the end, you were able to show that fighting spirit you've shown all season and come away with a 2-1 win to lead the league.
Yeah, it was a bit of a grind today. We haven't had one of these games for a while where we've kind of had to secure some goals and then hold on. But We played the football that we're trying to play, and we if you get the free kick count, I'd love to see that, because the amount of free kicks they had, Jesus. But yeah, just good from the boys. Just rock solid at the back, score goals up front. You know, look at our record. Probably, I don't know if we're top goal scorer, but we're up there, and we've probably conceded the least. So it says worlds about what we're doing here.
It was a bit of a slow start to the game. Balcatta probably had more of the territory. They had a couple of efforts on goal, but you guys just always stick to the task, and you've got some really good, exuberant young players up front who are just always going to chase everything down and keep you in games. And one of those players, Guy Davies, got on the score sheet again. Fourth game in a row in all competitions he scored. So just tell me about him and the other Floriat youngsters who are really making their mark on this team this season.
Yeah, well, Guy Davies is actually, before he's a player, he's an actual fan. So he actually loves the club, which is a big plus before he gets on the pitch. But when he gets on the pitch, he leaves his heart on the sleeve. And it just goes to show you, he's scored 3 or 4 goals now. He leads from the front. He's hungry, wants the ball, wants to do well, loves the club, ticks all the boxes. You've got Mo in there just pulling strings in the middle and just workhorse. Cherno, workhorse, you know what I mean? Ajak, right back. I think he came from Guelup. Workhorse again. Ali, workhorse. They're just all the boys just banding together, playing the system we want to play and just sticking together, because not everything's going to be smooth, just like you saw today.
Playing good football, but also keeping things really tight at the back. The league's best defence, only 7 goals conceded now, I think, after today's game. And Floriat have been a team historically in the past that have really entertained. Even the season when you won the league, I think you probably still only had the 3rd or 4th best defence in the league. So what's changed, I suppose, from previous seasons to this season, where you've got this real tough, gritty rear guard that's hard to break down all of a sudden?
Yeah, we want to be tough to beat, and we want to be ruthless in front of goals. They're kind of our 2 mentalities that we want to kind of bring into the game and bring into the club. So we've still got some experienced heads. We've got Christo, we've got Chris Saldaris, we've got Ben Steele, we've still got some experienced heads, but we're still filling in two out of the 4 positions with new blokes. You know, our midfield's completely changed up. So like we've been working at training to work on shape, work on how we are attacking, defending, and just be hard to beat. Just be really tough to beat and just be ruthless in front of goals.
Tricky season last year, obviously, just avoiding relegation on the final day. But to lead the league now, it's a heck of a turnaround. And we all know that this league is a heck of a competition and it can change up and down from week to week. But what do you think is the biggest change, or perhaps some of the key reasons why the guys have been able to turn it around this year?
Oh, I just think it's a bit of mentality. I think last year really, really shot us in the foot a bit. You know, like we're not a side that wants to come to you and then lose 3 or 4 goals or be arguing. We're always a team that wants to be top of wherever we go. We want to have that swagger, play with swagger, and now we've just got to take a step back. Night series wasn't too good for us. We've taken a step back, we've reassessed, and we've kind of gone from there and played how we want to play with a different squad, you know, which is massive.
And top of the league now, 1 point clear of the Knights after today's results. I suppose teams are going to be the ones looking at you guys now, and you're going to have the target on your back. You're the team to catch now. So are the boys ready to embrace that challenge now as the league's leading side?
Yeah, I think we were the hunted for a long time. And, you know, now I think we still got to stick to that mentality of being the hunters still. You know what I mean? People want to come, we still hunt them down and pick them off and play the way we want to play.
Well done, Jason. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And brilliant stuff, as always, from Mr. Dolman. Great interview as well there from Jason Saldaris. Yeah, I've mentioned Giles Davies a few times so far, and how great it is to see him, getting the goals and apparently being so loved and okay, that
Guy
sort
Davies.
Of. Oh, Guy sorry, Davies. Guy Davies. Yeah, yeah.
Giles
no one loves Giles Davies.
Giles is getting at Sterling yeah, Macedonia.
That's right. Yes, yeah. Thank you, Josh. It's my first day. But great to see him scoring goals. And the other interesting thing I thought from that was hearing about Jason just talking about the mentality difference between being the hunters and the hunted, and how they obviously hadn't won the league for so long, so they felt like they were chasing that, hunting that, obviously, and then when they win it, all of a sudden they're there to be shot at, and the mentality was just not right from them that last season. As we all know, they finished obviously off with the cup, but Kelechi, what do you think? How big is that mentality he's talking about now, just wanting to go out there and hunt every team, like go out and get after them rather than let them dictate the game?
Well, it's huge, right? We talk about it every year about the team who has finished climbing the mountain, and do they have that same motivation to climb the mountain again? And, you know, not to ruin a segue into another part of the show, but you look at Perth Red Star right now, and they've had a pretty tough start to the season. But they are no longer the team who's trying to get over that hump. And maybe their performance has kind of suffered a little bit compared to what it is last year. And sometimes it can only be a dip of 5 or 10%. And that can be all that it takes. At the top end, it's 1 or 2%. That's how fine the margins are. So it's good to see that he's kind of, well, it's interesting to see that he's kind of said, yeah, look, the mentality kind of changed because we'd finally done it. And it's very hard to go and do it back to back. And I suppose that's why you've got to give teams who do win the league 2 years in a row or 3 years in a row a lot of kudos for doing that.
And now, Josh, you're on Friday watch. You got any updates on that situation there? How many goals out of how many long-range shots this season?
We're unaware of how many he's taken. He has been a bit of a bit part player off the bench. He's got on for 7 matches played, but a total of 42 minutes so far. I think he at one point told me that I was responsible for him not being in the starting lineup.
I think that's,
to which
I agree.
I said it was Kalichi's fault.
We all love passing the buck around
and to
here,
direct,
don't we?
Yeah. And to direct complaints to the producer of the podcast.
Well, you know what? He's obviously, he's just a presence in the change rooms, obviously. He has impact even when you don't expect it. He's got him to the top of the league just by being there. But we won't talk too much more about that because Tommy's covered that all for us.
It does kind of mean his due at some point. Like he's going to come on and score a reaper, and then he's going to wind up because Kelechi has been blown up on this bloke's Instagram stories for weeks in a row now.
Yeah, I cannot wait for that moment, and we'll do a Friday special.
This isn't inside baseball. It's a matter of public record.
Can I just ask, obviously I don't want to talk about the game, but is this why you commented on the Perth Football podcast result about Florit being top, saying something like, he can't comment, he's a curse or something like that?
Yo, man, he tagged me in an Instagram video, just the snippet of me being like, hey, Florit, this is what you've done. You've added Friday's Eco to your team. Where did he finish last year? Where did he finish the year before? And he just says top of the league. And I'm like, man, what am I supposed to say? I'm sorry. You've proved me wrong. All right, Kendrick? I'm sorry.
There is so much content that man provides. We could talk for hours about his story that he gave us when we were down at Armidale. But that deserves a whole other podcast of its own.
I'm gonna start following him right now.
Also, speaking of Armidale, and also obviously Kelechi's terrible predictions, what a double segue that is. Inglewood 1, Armidale 4. Inglewood continue to be that bad girlfriend that Kelechi shouldn't keep going back to, but he keeps going back and tipping them. And they got beat 1-4 at home to Armidale. They took the lead early on and then it all fell apart. You were watching that one, Nick. You got a little summary for us?
Yeah, definitely. It was, to be honest, I think I mentioned in the group chat, you know, the first 10 minutes, Armidale looked as though there was everywhere. And I thought, you know, Inglewood have listened to our podcast. They've taken things on board. And for 10 minutes, they looked great. They went up after 6 minutes. corner kick. It must have been a routine because it was great work. I always pronounce his name, Kieran Salinger.
I would go with Salinger, but I don't know what the.
It must be Salinger, yeah.
We should start calling him JD.
Why JD? Yeah.
Oh, that's a literary joke, I believe.
Oh, yeah, okay. So he's a famous and reclusive author.
Right. Well, I can't read, so you know that's me. he great work on the back post, corner kick onto the back. He's just headed across, and then Jordan Brown's just lost his marker and headed home. After that, it kind of brought Armadale to life, and again, unfortunately for Inglewood, they didn't have an answer for him at all. A group of goals in the middle. So at 15 minutes, Wishart Stephen got a penalty. What a player he is, if I haven't already said so. Luke Collins finally on the score sheet, young captain of Armadale, brought in this season from Perth. And he got on the goal sheet there. And then Jacobs on 39 minutes. And what was quite interesting to see is, like, you look at the names on the team sheets and you look at who Inglewood have got to bring on, and you know they took off Evans again at half time, and I know it's not going well for him. From what I can see, he's playing up front, but they don't really have much to replace him with. And then Cook scored to put the nail in the coffin at 85 minutes. You know, it's not looking good for him. I hope they can turn it around, but I mean, when you've only scored 3 goals, 2 from set pieces, and you've conceded 23 in 7 games, it's not looking good at all.
Yeah, we've got Tommy Dolman on the job of trying to find the worst NPL seasons ever and how bad things will have to get for Inglewood until we start talking about them in that sort of category. But Kelechi, what were your thoughts on this one?
I was just going to ask Nick, since he saw it. You know, we covered them before in the Coach Carter series. Did you see anything different in this time? Because, you know, we got the stats talking about Armadale, for example, about how they create a lot of chances, they just don't score goals. And, you know, that's something for them to work on. But did you notice anything from an Inglewood perspective that they have been working on, or that was kind of like letting them down? Because we thought it was just individual mistakes. And I spoke to Taki and he kind of spoke to some players about addressing that. But was there anything else that you kind of saw?
Well, what I noticed is I got the stats from after the game because I was quite interested in that. And according to the stats, they had 9 shots and only 4 were on target, and one of them's a goal. Whereas compare that to Armadale, they had 19 shots, 7 on target. But there was no real difference. The ball's still going long. They're not trying to keep possession. The midfield just don't have a chance. This time, the keeper, Specker, wasn't passing it to his centre-back right next to him to go long. That was probably the only major difference, but they just, it's not like they've got a style or anything. It literally is just long ball football, and it's not working. With what's happening, it's just not working for them.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because we looked at those, you know, you have the stats this week, Kelechi, and I mean, again, you've got to take them with a grain of salt. I think even at the top level, we've talked many times about XG and how that can, you know, be a little bit misleading, and it's all very contextual in the game, and that can change, you know, how much a team pushes on. And if you're taking more chances, you're just naturally going to be inflating your XG sort of artificially. And but Inglewood's numbers weren't that bad, and in fact were like on par with say Knights near the top of the table. Yeah. So it's really hard to know. And again, as we've said many times, once that mentality sets in, you can be creating those chances, and then all of a sudden, if you're not scoring them and you don't score them for a long time, all of a sudden you stop creating those chances, heads drop, people start arguing, and that's the real situation that they're very rapidly finding themselves in, Josh.
I think that, you know, you can talk about, oh, they go long, and we can deride like direct football, but there's ways to be direct, and Inglewood have actually done pretty well in the last couple seasons. I mean, not so much last season, the season before, that they were really effective as a direct team. They were hitting Harry Evans on the head. He was knocking the ball down. They had the speed of Chad Nilsson, a few other players, and they still have those weapons in the squad. They have Benson and Segetse and Chad Nilsson and Chubb McCullough. and they added Kotaro Yamamoto, and it's just not coming together. One thing I'm going to be really interested about, and actually before I get to that, I mean, it is disappointing thing because there was a lot of positivity that first game of the season when I was out there, and they had Perth Glory and they were the better side and conceded a sloppy goal. And then since then, that seemed to have set them off on the wrong path. Just for in a broader sense on the league, it's going to be interesting when the transfer window does come up, because if you remember last season, pretty much no one was able to pick up players from other clubs, particularly other NPL clubs, because nobody wanted to grant a release. And part of that was a function of the league being so tight. Like if you were the third place team and you sent a player off to play for the team that was in 10th, they could pass you in 2 weeks, which was just how like insane it was last season. Now, is there going to be a situation where a player who's on the fringe of a team that's near the top of the table might end up going to one of those teams because they need minutes or they need to put themselves in the shop window for scouts, and the only way to do that is to actually be on the field? So it is going to be interesting to see if the transfer window has a different dynamic to it this year, or whether we're still going to see that real adversarial behavior from the clubs where they don't want to release anyone.
And it's, you know, like with what you're saying, Josh, as well, like touching on how they've done, it's a new coach this year as well. So Taki's definitely got a certain way of playing, which has made him successful. I don't think this is the way he would normally play. So, you know, is it the players that are not doing it for him? I would say so. You know, they're probably used to doing a certain way. And under Andreas Oliveira, they were quite successful. You know, they pushed forward. They won the night series under him. But Taki's way is completely different, and this is not normal football that I've seen Taki play before.
Well, the good news for them is it is still early enough in the season that they can turn things around. But yeah, they'll want to get moving on that soon. Last little game to touch on before we have a chat with Mark Madison from Peak Performance about one of my most hated topics, ankle stability and strapping. Many, many ankle injuries over my years of terrible football that I played. But we'll get to that just after we quickly touch on Kingsway 5, one that Kenny will be happy that we'll skim over this week. Perth 0. Kingsway 5, Josh, and how many of them scored by your man, Tyler Garner?
Zero. I do want to give him some credit. I think he's been away playing international futsal or something like that. So,
yeah, but when the goals are there, I'm there for offer. When there's five on the table and he doesn't want to take any of them.
And it was a good opportunity because the way Perth played sort of played into Kingsway's hands. They were obviously, you know, Kenny wants to play out from the back. Perth were really keen, and you could see like the fifth goal that goes in, where Abdul Osman's picking the ball up from his goalkeeper, basically sort of right next to the penalty spot, and he basically steps on the ball, and the next touch is Oxborough smashing it into the bottom corner. So there were definitely goals on offer in that game. You know, Perth unfortunately were set off on the wrong foot by a very, very unfortunate own goal, which you might want to touch on.
Sensational, Josh Keller.
I feel really bad for Josh Keller because he obviously had that big injury last year and he's just getting back into the starting lineup now. But, you know, everybody has highlights like that that they don't want to look back on in their football career, and that'll definitely be one for Joshy, who put it over goalkeeper Rocco Liberti with the most glorious chip that you'll see anyone not intend to do.
Yeah, Tommy Dolman described it as a bizarre own goal when he looped a back pass over his goalkeeper from the edge of the box, and that's a perfect description of it. And then four goals in 16 second half minutes it was. They just absolutely ran amok. Joe Knowles doing what he does, not just scoring goals, but teeing up other people to score goals. Teed one up for Liam Boland, and then I think he scored from a Ryan Lowry long pass, and Mitch Oxborough, you already mentioned, completed the route. And yeah, big result for Kingsway. They still show that they have no designs in letting anyone get too far away from them at the top. They're just 2 points behind Athena, one behind Knights, one ahead of Fremantle. It is yeah, going to be very interesting over the next few weeks to see how all of those teams go. Very, very tight at the top, as it always is at the start of the season. But I can see this tightness stretching for a few more weeks to come at least. It's looking like it's going to be another thrilling NPL season. And with that, we will take a short break and get to that little chat with Mark Madison that I mentioned earlier. So have a break, listen to that, and we'll be back with part two after this. All right, and we are here, as always, with the Peak Performance's own Mark Madison. Mark, thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
I think it's the first time you've been here with Nick Carter. He's also with us.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Yep, good, mate. Good. Good.
And we're having a few audio issues with you hearing the greatest man there, but you know him well enough to know that you probably don't want to hear what he has to say anyway. But if he can get that sorted out, he'll obviously chime in. But yeah, let's dive into the topic. So this week you wanted to talk about ankle strapping and ankle stability. Is that something that there's been much of a change on or a development on over the years, or would the strapping I used to get from my old physio at the footy have been the same way they do it these days?
Yeah, the consensus is, you know, by players, it's more a comfort thing. So they want to get their comfort, they want to get their support and their, you know, the confidence, basically. So that if usually it happens with players that have had that ankle injury in the past, they've rolled an ankle, and I'm sure if you haven't rolled an ankle, you've all known somebody who's rolled an ankle pretty bad. I've done one or two in my time, and I've probably got a little bit of ankle instability. Now, I don't strap my ankles anymore. I have done in the past. Once that acute period post-injury is there, I've done that, but then I work on my ankles. So it's a matter of what you want to do as a player. People either go down the route then of always strapping them, always having them strapped. And I think you'll find the players in all sports that change direction the fastest, really plant that foot, want that extra support. They're the players that will probably want both ankles strapped and always want them strapped in the future, no matter how much balance work they do and how much work they do on preventing injury. So I suppose the big question is, what does ankle strapping do? It does one of two things. This it provides that physical barrier and the ability to stop what we call an inversion injury. So basically when the ankle rolls in and the sole of the foot faces the other foot, it helps to stop that from happening. And the more layers of tape you put on, the harder it is to do that. So some players will like light strapping, some people like it heavy. But then there's that, what they call the proprioception. So what's proprioception? Proprioception is that internal feeling or knowledge of where you are in three-dimensional space. And tape helps to give a bit more feedback. It helps our brain to understand where we are, what we're doing, and where we're moving to and how much movement we have. So I suppose in a nutshell, that's how it works, but there's more and more of a movement now for players to become more proprioceptive aware. So those elite athletes, they'll do the balance board, they'll get on the Bosu. I'm sure you've all seen those. Half a football, they're hard on one side and they're bow-shaped on the other. Get on them, do your exercises. You know, some people like to do their squats balanced on a football, but not me these days. Definitely not. But and then that helps with that proprioception and knowing where you are in three-dimensional space and understanding where your ligaments are, where your joints are, and to stop you from rolling that ankle so easily.
Well, and then finally, I think it's probably a good example of what you're talking about, especially with proprioception, which is a story of probably my worst injury playing football, and that was actually playing for Nigeria with Kalichi in the African Cup of Nations here in Perth, if you'd believe that. Came on at left back for about 5 minutes and just went to shield the ball from someone, sort of stepped in a bit of a pothole, bit of a crunch from behind, and the ankle just went crunch. And I've had many, many bad ankle injuries over the years, and usually you can sort of keep going on them even though it hurts initially. And then it will swell up over those next couple of days. And this time in particular, it swelled up to the size of a balloon, and I could barely walk on it. And the physio that I went to, who I obviously won't name, given that the treatment wasn't very good, was they basically looked at it and assessed it, and then just gave me a bunch of those exercises that you're talking about, just doing some proprioception exercise when I felt like I could, and some strengthening exercises. And it didn't get better for a couple of weeks until I eventually went to a doctor who said, go and get an x-ray, and it had been fractured. And there were, fractured bones in my ankle that the physio that I went to obviously didn't identify. That's obviously not them doing their job as they should be, but how do you deal with that? Because obviously the swelling will be the same, and it makes it hard to determine. But what's the initial signs that this is worse than just a sprain that you need to rehab?
Yeah, so when you get that initial swelling period, just like any injury, you're gonna get swelling, you're gonna get heat. People are told to ice it, and there's a bit more controversy around the research with that now. Some people are saying, you know, just to keep it moving, keep the compression on it. Some people will even strap an ankle now post-injury to give you that support, or put you in a brace. Now, when it is that bad, you should always have a clinician look at it. They should follow a set of rules where basically if you can't walk on it, plus of other couple of contact areas, four other areas on the foot, if you can't poke or prod them without pain, then if there's too much pain and you can't weight bear, I send people off to a scan straight away. X-ray, ultrasound, sometimes with both, and then that's up to what can be seen. However, still those ankle cracks, so they sometimes can be a minor fracture, it's non-displaced, don't show up straight away either. I have seen or heard of that with a natural physio that went and had an x-ray done. No, nothing wrong. They were still not able to weight bear 5 weeks later. Found out they had microfractures in their actual bone in their ankle, and it was all the way through the ankle, and they didn't pick it up until they did MRI. So basically, at the end of the day, can you walk? Can you move on it? A couple of days later, you should be able to put some weight. If you can't, go back to the doctors, go back to your physio, go back to emergency, wherever you went, and, you know, get that seen too, because otherwise you're going to need to be in a cast or a boot or something to stop that movement and help it heal faster.
Yeah.
Mark,
Sorry, Nick. I was just going to say, I'll let you have the last question of the segment. I was just going to say, I wish I'd come and seen you at peak performance all those years ago, Mark, because it would have saved me weeks of agony and trying to do exercises that I couldn't do. But Nick?
Sorry, guys. So with the strappings, obviously they have a benefit that can reduce the risk of an ankle sprain of around about 62% from the latest studies that I remember reading from last year.
Yeah.
When I did a study on it about 15 years ago, it was saying that after the strapping for a 90-minute game will only last around about 20 minutes because of the sweat and the effects of it. Mm-hmm. Is there anything to say that the it lasts a lot longer now?
So over the course of time, depends on the layers. So you can go 4, 5, 6 layers of tape. The more tape you chuck on, the longer that's going to last. And at the end of the day, if you get someone twice your size careening into you from side on, you know you're going to roll your ankle. And it's a matter of probably reducing the level of damage as much as having the right shoes that fit well and being proprioceptively aware. So being able to have that balance and awareness, all those things, at the end of the day, they're going to reduce the level of the injury and help you bounce back sooner, because it can be up to 12 weeks, especially some of these high ankle sprains. And a high ankle sprain is another kettle of fish. It's where the foot usually rotates the other way, prising the two lower bones apart and tearing basically the tissues between your lower leg bones and separating that out. And that's the one you see in AFL more, where people get pulled to the ground and their foot rotates outwards. And, yeah, that tends to take a lot longer to recover. And yeah, can be ongoing too. So.
All right. Well, yeah, thank you very much once again, Mark. And the best advice I can give anyone is, yeah, if you have an ankle problem, do not go and see who I went and saw, who, again, I won't mention, but you don't even need to know, because the people to go and see are Peak Performance, and Mark and the crew down there do the best coffees. They do the best treatments. And just before we let you go, Mark, Kalichi's popped back and he wants to say hello and ask something maybe.
I was just going to say hello, firstly, but I wasn't going to ask something. I was just also just going to reiterate, go and see the good people at Peak Performance. We finally have our vouchers. And so we handed one in to Austin Reynolds on the weekend, who was our Peak Performer of the Week. Nice. He won himself a recovery session, and he won the team, the entire Forest Field team, a 50% off on the recovery session as well. So when the season gets a little bit tough for the boys, make sure you go out there and you go see the good people at Peak Performance. And I don't know which game we'll be at this weekend, but the guys will be at games. We've now got double sets of mics, partly to the partly thanks to some of the work and the money that we've got from Peak Performance and from the Casual Football Co. and from Macron and our Patreon staff. So we now have a little bit more mics and a little bit more ability to get to more games and provide these vouchers to more Peak Performances as well. So huge thank you to the Peak Performance team.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks again, Mark. We will speak to you soon.
No worries, guys.
And we'll be back with Puck 2 after this. And we are back with part two, just the three games to go to wrap up the round seven. And we're going to start with Stirling 0, Red Star 1. Now, this was one that I know all of us were having a bit of trouble with the tips for obvious reasons. It was one that was hard to split, and it was hard to split on the pitch as well. And it took a late Red Star goal, not a late Red Star goal, but a second half Red Star goal. But before we jump into that, we missed out on this in the Olympic Kingsway game. Kalichi hit the button.
Now you listen here. He's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. Now go away.
That's right. Two very different situations for our naughty boys this week. Let's start with that Kingsway one, Kalichi. 5-0 up already, and then a red card in the 79th minute, I believe. You talk us through that one.
That's the one I didn't see, but Nick got a good view of that one.
Oh, sorry, Nick. You tell us about that one.
Yeah, no, that's all good, mate. Yeah. Let me just think. Kingsway. Sorry, I have to try and remember it then. Kingsway with a ball out. It was just clear the lines from the box. And then who was it who got sent off?
Luke Hewings,
that's it. It was a heavy first touch. And as they say, your first touch is good, but your second one's a tackle. That was pretty much him. Touch out in front of him, and then he's just landed above the ankle of the Perth player, and he's just been given a red for it. So, as we know, anything above the ankle is a red card these days.
Can I just say?
I don't want
to. I noticed. I've just got on the timeline, and it's in Hewing 74 minutes, red card Hewing 79 minutes, and he's listened to Tuffy there. Tuffy said, "Look, I want you to come on and make an impact on the game. I want you to leave your mark on the game," and he absolutely did.
I see they've changed the strictness around those since you were playing Kalichi.
Oh, stop.
they certainly have.
Managed 10 minutes every game.
Not the time you want to be getting that red card when you're already 5-0 up. Probably could have swerved making that tackle, but you caught the other red card, Kalichi, late on in the as Stirling were headed towards that Red Star defeat.
Yeah, we talk about all action displays. It was a pretty couple minutes for Danny Douglas, who scored the own goal to give Stirling the lead. And then late in the play, a ball, it's an awful pass. Basically, the centre half passes to the other centre half. His touch is awful. It bounces up, goes knee height, and he kind of puts it into Danny Douglas, who's like 6 metres away. Danny tries to control it. Bryce Bafford sneaks in, puts his body in the way, and he tries to get around him. Bafford goes down, And Tom Glavovich is just like, well, look, it's an attacking opportunity. The person's going, I don't know what you call it, Josh, where you're stopping a promising attacking opportunity or something like that.
Spa.
Yeah. Stopping a promising attack.
So it would be stopping a promising attack. And Tom Glavovich is like, what? It's a yellow card. Gives him the yellow card. And I think he realizes, shit, it's a second yellow card. So he pulls it out. And I'm like, because it's one of those ones where, like, you don't necessarily need to send the player off, so to speak. But if you're going, all right, littered by the law, not spirit of the game, you just go, okay, you're just autopilot and you give the person the second yellow card. And you can see Brent Quick on the side just going like, what the F is that?
At least he didn't drop his notebook next to the player who he just sent off like a certain referee did a couple seasons ago.
Shout out to the great Dave Averson. We love you, mate. But yeah, look, that's you've described the goal, you've described the game. It's a result that means that Red Star and Stirling swap places in the table, and Red Star now sixth, just 2 points off fourth. And again, we know how tight it is at the top, and Stirling 2 points behind them in seventh. Did anyone else have anything more to say about that one?
I just wanted to say something really quickly. It's a huge result for Perth Red Star. It's the first time. I think they've only had one win in 10, or two wins in 10, and one of them was in extra time. So they don't beat Stirling Macedonia often. Otherwise, it's in penalties. They played in the night series and they were up 2-0 and somehow managed to get it to extra time and penalties. So the fact that they got the win over them, I think, is going to be really good for the side, because Stirling tend to typically match with them very, very well. And obviously, there was that famous 3-0 at halftime and they lost 4-3 games. So it's kind of been in their heads. So I'm sure getting the monkey off the back will help them and do them a world of good.
Played havoc with our tips this week as well.
Well, yeah, and the Glory this week, as you mentioned, they are the next game on our run sheet. Their defensive frailties solidified a little from their perilously low lows of recent weeks, but they still conceded two, and that was a Jalen Pearman stunner was the consolation goal for the Glory, that equalised after a Pat Lowry free kick. Going low through the wall, which is something you don't ever want to see as a goalkeeper or as a coach. And then the winner coming as Jesse Fuller headed a corner back across goal, and Cam Edwards forced it over from close range. So that's 3-4 for Matty Sparrow's team, 100% record at home. Well, for Glory, we've mentioned their recent perils. Is three losses in a row now for them, and they're down to eighth. Anything from anyone about those two? I didn't catch anything from this game.
These teams are really cutting into your theory about the away.
I've told you that's flipped. It's flipped this season.
It's just gone the entire other way.
It really has. We talked about it last week, but the number of teams with either perfect home records or undefeated at home is quite stunning. And I don't know about the rest of the game. Well, yeah, Kingsway obviously with the big win, Floriat winning at home. This round was a bit more even in terms of home versus away. But yeah, it does seem to be carrying on that trend, and certain teams in particular, obviously Fremantle being right up there, starting to look like there are a few fortresses. I thought all our fortresses had been dismantled here in Perth, but it looks like a few more have been erected this season, so we'll keep an eye on that. It's gonna.
The bookies would be having a really good year.
Yeah, why do you say that?
Well, I mean, because they're not actually here, right? So they're not doing like the greatest form guides, and they tend to put the premium on the home team, which is what you noticed last year is that you had all these away teams that were on like big blowouts. But you had these away teams that were like pretty similar in quality to the home teams, and then they were at like $4-1 to win just because they were the away team.
Yeah, I'm sure that they would do a little bit of scouting, surely, and realize that. It's Caligi. Sorry, you go.
No, I was going to talk when you guys were done, so you just keep going with the scouting. I'll just wrap it up by saying something nice about Alex Sulla, who's hurt again.
Okay. No, I want to get onto that. So all I was saying was I'm sure that they follow all the form guide and they would know how much of a home advantage there is or not. But Yeah, go on, say nice things about Alex Silla. We all want to hear that.
Just wanted to, wish Alex Silla all the best for his recovery. He's a player who we've really enjoyed. I love a good marauding fullback who's actually talented, unlike myself. and hearing that he was injured and back on the treatment table.
He's not injured again, is he?
Yeah, mate, he's hurt again. Oh. So wishing him all the best. Huge goal by Pat Lowry as well, another fullback who's marauding. Good little free kick. And we're hearing that Ollie Lagolia is getting teased about the nickname that we've got for him. Ollie, mate, you just keep your head up. You got a nickname because you're doing something great. These other schmucks.
Jealous.
Jealous.
Tall poppy syndrome is alive and well in Australia, mate. Ollie, they're going to shoot you down when you're at the top.
Ollie said he likes it. Ollie said he likes it.
And I'm glad he likes it. He's scoring the goals.
He's giving you the big ups.
All right, excellent. Long may it continue, mate. We want to keep seeing you on the score sheet so we can keep saying it. Final game to touch this week, one I mentioned in passing because of the great Justin Tang coming off the bench and scoring there on the volley in stoppage time to maintain Knights' unbeaten run to the season. I'm sure they wouldn't have had any dreams of being undefeated after seven games this season in their first year back up. But, yeah, it's been great for them. It looked like this was going to be their first loss of the season when Alex Sheeta-Living got forward and squared for Samuel Dway to open the scoring in the 85th minute. But, yeah, they say, once again, another one of those stupid football cliches that Josh and I probably don't think is true, but you're always most vulnerable when you've just scored, and it proved to be the case. So, yeah, it's still Knights undefeated. Again, we still don't know quite how good they are and whether or not this run will continue, but it's still obviously very hard to score goals against them. And that's got to go a long way. When it's hard to score goals against you, it's hard to beat you, isn't it, Kalichi?
Yeah, we're students of Rafa Benitez, and maybe you can talk more about this, Nick. But like, if you're creating a team, like, what's the first kind of thing that you would go for to make sure that you can actually survive and one, survive in the league, but also potentially challenge?
Yeah, clean sheets, definitely. And do you know what? I was just looking at exactly that. They've scored 13, they've conceded 8. The next team to them is Perth Red Star, who've only conceded 8, and then Florida Fiend, who conceded 7. But that's the first thing you do. You know, if you do not concede, you can't lose the game. Simple as that. It's an old cliche, but it's the truth. It's factual. So, I mean, that's what they're doing. And as I've said before, you ask any coach, going to their ground is the hardest place to go and try and win a game. It is very, very hard. Every coach will tell you the same thing.
I think if you don't score goals, you can't win games either, though. Isn't that right?
This is my favorite thing about Italian football.
We've done this before.
If you had got a 0-0 draw in every game last season in the NPL men's competition, you would have finished dead last and you would have been relegated below Coburn.
There you go. So you do have to score goals. But no, I think the big thing that it can do is it's not just the fact that, you know, we've looked into stats and whether or not it's better to have a good attack or a good defense. And it turns out that, hey, who knew? They're both very, very important. But the one thing that defensive solidity, I think, does more than anything is your midfielders and your attackers know that they can miss a few chances. It's not going to be the end of the world because they might only need to take one or two having that pressure, thinking, I'm going to have to take all my chances or we've got no chance.
It gives you a base, doesn't it? You know, like a base to start from. You've got a good keeper, you've got a good defence, then you can build on that. And as much as, like you say, scoring goals are very, very important, don't get wrong, but if you don't concede and you get that one chance and score, you can just have one chance all game. That's all you need. And they've been doing that.
Well, we hope this podcast has given you a good base to kick off the week and get you rolling, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Another reminder to jump on the Patreon if you want a bit more of us in your ear holes, particularly Kalichi and Nick. They've got their Coach Carters and and all the other full-time whistle stuff. There was one. I think we gave you a freebie this week, didn't we? The Forest Field one, because it was a very special day. So make sure you do go and check that one out, because that was a great listen. With Kalichi, Josh, who else was there?
Just us.
It was the two of us.
Jebed, who were you? Just the two of you? You didn't have any special guests?
If you check the socials out, we have an interview on there with Austin Reynolds, Daryl Platten, the coach of Forest Field, and most importantly, James Oliver, who really big thank you to him for agreeing to come out and do an interview with us. He was obviously Scarlett Oliver's uncle and captain Forest Field, is the captain of Forest Field United, and it was incredibly raw and emotional for him. His brother Paul, who's one of the coaches at Forest Field, he wasn't able to attend. Obviously, a very tough time for the family, but it was incredibly humbling to see the embrace between James and Daryl, who I worked with a bit when I was down at Forest Field after the game. Because it clearly meant so much to the family, and it meant so much to James himself, given the connection he would have had with Scarlett.
I got told
that's what I was thinking of. I knew there was more Forest Field content on there, so do go and check that out, Kalichi.
I was just going to say, I got told by one of the fans being like, he usually plays shit, but he's been amazing today. And you know, when we spoke to him at the end of the game, he was like, look, I just wanted to perform. I just wanted to make sure we won, and that was a big priority. So, yeah, like we've talked about this all the time. In those games where there's a lot of emotions, there's a lot of want to, a lot of desire, it can kind of go the wrong way. But the performance that he put in was exemplar, and he would have done his family proud with that one as well.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Before we do go, we haven't done our celebration watch this week, and I believe Guy Davies got himself he's getting himself amongst the goals, but he's also getting himself amongst the celebrations. The famous Erling Haaland yoga pose was pulled out. Did we see any other good celebrations this week, or is that one taking the cake for us?
I think that one's taking the cake. I don't recall any other ones. There was the Pout Lowry who scored and couldn't believe that he scored, so he just kind of like ran like a crazy person back to halfway, which I absolutely love. Anything that you saw in at Armadale, I think Wichard Stevens went towards the corner flag or the sideline. I will say that the Forest Field players all knew where Cat Bryant, the photographer, was at all times. They knew exactly where she was. So as soon as they scored, they were like, all right, here's the pose. Here's my moment of fame. And I appreciate that. I love that hustle.
But they as well, they're actually good for it. Just to say, like, not to crap on celebrations, because obviously we want to crap on Guy Davies for doing the yoga pose. But the celebrations they did, I think Josh Gardner went to the camera and did a love heart. And Alec Robinson, when he scored, went to the camera and did the holding, the carrying the baby as well. So they were appropriate for the occasion also.
Beautiful stuff. Well, guys, any more before we sign off for another week?
Josh? I need to represent Tommy Dolman, who unfortunately can't make it on this podcast. I'm his advocate.
Jesus.
And we need to talk about what his Macron... We need to talk about what his Macron moment of the week would have been.
Oh, God.
Which was...
No, we don't.
In the State League where the Mandurah City goalkeeper... trying to conserve a 2-1 lead after conceding late in the game, sits on the ball only to have four separate tune-up players and the goalkeeper crowd hilarious. Around him to wrestle it off him and threaten him with a yellow card if he didn't let them take the ball back to the center circle.
He was lying on top of the ball. We went straight past him into the back of the net, and he dived back into the net. You're supposed to actually dive on the ball before it goes into the net, I'll tell you. But, yeah, he turned around and dived into the net to get the ball and then had three players on top of him.
And funniest man in football, that lad.
All right, we'll make sure we get
Tommy
some more Alfie stories.
Standoff between the, Tommy loves yeah. the standoff between the penalty taker and the goalkeeper after the penalty's been taken, not before.
I think we said that was he said that's his favorite thing in football, which as a football connoisseur, I think is an absolute disgrace. I'll say that again. But Kalichi, you've got one more.
Shout out to Coburn. They got their first win under the new president, and huge shout out to Heidi, of course. Sean wrote something really nice to Heidi. It's on our Facebook page. So Heidi Lazaro, the old president of Coburn, who's had a tenure and a half lasted longer than most African presidents in African countries, which tells you how long she's been at that job working out there. So congrats on them, and congrats on the Cockerels getting a win for Heidi.
Absolutely. I said it all on the post, but she was one of the hardest workers in Perth football, for no praise, no credit, and she never looked for it either. So it was, I feel like there's not much more I can say than that. She'll be sorely missed by the club, I'm sure. Anything else from you, Nick, before we head off?
No, I'm all good. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Beautiful. That's the answer we want. It's just like you're a school teacher and you don't want any more kids putting their hands up. So appreciate that. And we should go away, Josh. You can do it next week. We will be back next week for more. And we've also got the women's podcast coming up soon. Kalichi will be recording that one. So get your ears around that. And I'll just say, I'll let you say it, Kalichi.
Be careful and be kind.
We love you all. Bye, bye, bye.